Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, November 9th. I'm asking you to please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down the names, addresses, emails, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. And let's start with announcements. The Earth First Journal is currently seeking submissions for the winter issue of the Earth First Journal. They're looking for artwork, high-resolution photographs, poetry and other creative writing, critical analysis, reflections, how-to guides, reviews, and especially updates from your campaigns. Really, we'll take anything that puts the Earth first. The normal deadline for the winter or Yule issue was November 1st. However, due to Hurricane Irma, our fall Maybon issue was delayed, and we just got it in the mail. If you're not sure if we will have to push the winter issue back or we'll be able to move forward on schedule, apparently not. We'll update the newswire with that info when we figure it out. They haven't done that yet. But for now, please try and send in your submissions by November 15th. Please limit articles to 3,000 words and keep your reviews between 250 and 500 words, and do send your letters to the editors. The fall issue did not include a letters section simply because they didn't get enough letters for commenting on the journal. You can fix that. Not sure about your writing skills? No worries. The editorial collective welcomes writing from those with all levels and varieties of experience, and we especially encourage writing from activists. Send your articles as attached documents, not copy-pasted into the email, please, unless necessary for security reasons, to collective@earthfirstjournal.org. That email address, once again, is collective@earthfirstjournal.org, or you can actually send snail mail to Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 964, Lake Worth, Florida, 33460. That address again, the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 964, Lake Worth, Florida, 33460. And they're excited to hear from you, the Journal Collective. And come volunteer with the Buffalo Field Campaign. Stand with the last of the wild buffalo. Come join the Buffalo Field Campaign on the front lines. You could be in the field with the country's last wild buffalo, documenting both the good and the horrible that goes on in their everyday lives, helping us to share with the world what is taking place so that we can stop it. Volunteering your time and energy is both fulfilling and what the buffalo absolutely need. You could be skiing, snowshoeing, or hiking in the field, or help out at the office at base camp, making sure people on patrol are safe. You could help out in the kitchen, keeping everyone fed and full of energy. Our field season runs from now until June, when the buffalo are migrating into Montana and into the dangerous conflict zones. We run patrols in both the Hebgen Basin and the Gardner Basin, west and north of Yellowstone National Park. Morning, afternoon, and sometimes evening patrols are conducted in the Hebgen Basin while we do week-long shifts in the Gardner Basin where buffalo are in the most trouble. We're in the field every day monitoring the buffalo's migration and documenting all actions made against them. We are armed with two-way radios, still and video cameras. And what does our documentation do? The videos and photos are used to show the public what is really going on with the bison, what the government is trying to hide. They are also used in court if something illegal happens during the hunt, hazing, trapping, or shipping to slaughter. Your video could save the lives of buffalo who should desperately need the help, or it could be used to get justice on their behalf. Just your presence in the field shows the Department of Livestock, that's the Montana Department of Livestock, Yellowstone National Park Service, and other agencies, and so many more people that we are watching their every action. Your presence in the field with Buffalo Field Campaign shows we stand strong in the buffalo's behalf and will be the government's face every step of the way. The cameras hold the people doing the terrible actions accountable. The Yellowstone herds are the last genetically pure wild bison populations left in North America, where tens of millions once roamed. Buffalo Field Campaign wants to get them back across the land on the buffalo's own terms, where they belong, instead of confined in pens in the park and a small area just outside to the west. The buffalo need your help to accomplish these goals. Help get the bison back across the landscape where they truly belong. To find out more information, go to the volunteering page at the Buffalo Field Campaign's website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. That's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. You could send email to volunteer@buffalofieldcampaign.org, or you could give them a call at 406-646-0070. That's 406-646-0070. And from Canada, warriors remove Kinder Morgan anti-salmon spawning nets in this story from Warrior Publications as found on the Earth First Journal. Wild salmon warriors returned home yesterday after conducting a two-week observation and removal of Kinder Morgan's anti-salmon spawning nets that illegally disrupted four waterways in Sequipecmec territory. The mats were installed without any knowledge or consent of the nation, just as the Kinder Morgan pipeline is continuing without the free, prior, and informed consent of the nation as well. Upon learning the exact locations of four of the supposed seven installation sites, wild salmon warriors on the authority of the Sequipecmec Nation have removed all such mats in the area. The women of nations across the pipeline route have been clear they do not consent to Kinder Morgan or Justin Trudeau's dirty oil pipeline. The warriors have been clear as well. This pipeline will not be built. Stop the Kinder Morgan pipeline, all fish farms out of the ocean. For more information on fish farm occupations, see Swanson Occupation and the Mgesmawaga anyway, Cleansing Our Waters pages. For more information on the Tiny House Warriors projects to stop Kinder Morgan, see Tiny House Warriors. Otherwise, defend the water and the salmon, uphold the warriors and the movement. And unfortunately, Grand Canyon icon Katie Lee has passed away at the age of 98. Katie Lee, a noted activist, environmentalist, folk singer, river runner, and writer, has died at her home in Jerome, Arizona. She was 98 years old. Born in 1919 in Tucson, Arizona, as a child, she had a natural talent for playing the piano, and it seemed as if she might spend much of her life as a performer. Her career began as an actress on stage and screen in the 1940s. By the 1950s, she turned to songwriting and folk singing, which took her on the road and to every state across the country for a decade. Legendary singer Burl Ives is reported to have said, "The best cowboy singer I know is a girl, Katie Lee." But in 1953, her life changed course. She went home to perform, and at the after party at her family's ranch, she watched a 16-millimeter film of her high school friend Tad Nichols steering his first powerboat round down the Colorado River in the Grand Canyon. "Holy Mother of Mary, I've got to get there, but even though I'd made great strides in Hollywood, I didn't have any money," Lee told a reporter in an interview for Women's Movement. Nichols called her late that night with a solution. He said, "Bring your food and guitar, let's make it work." Lee made her first trip down the Canyon and would go on to become the first and the best known, and certainly among the most loved of the canyon's many characters. Soon she was spending whole months in the Grand Canyon and San Juan Rivers. She became just the third woman to run all of the Grand Canyon's rapids. Once she paddled Glen Canyon, she became enthralled. "That's when the 186 miles of pure Eden that is Glen Canyon captivated me and made me its slave," Lee said. Before the Glen Canyon Dam was built in 1956, Lee spoke with a fury and an often foul-mouthed passion against the dam's construction, and her plight did not extinguish for the following six decades. "There are good dams that are built for the right reasons and in the right place, but this dam was built in the wrong place for the wrong reasons, and there are many like it across the country. When you kill a river, you kill everything around it for miles," she told the reporter in 2015. She would go on to work closely as an advisor and activist for the Glen Canyon Institute, a nonprofit that advocates for the Colorado River to return to a free-flowing state. She also authored five books, including her nonfiction narrative, Glen Canyon Betrayed, with an introduction by Terry Tempest Williams. Along with activists like Edward Abbey and David Brower, Lee was an environmentalist before such a phrase even existed, though she remained relatively unknown compared to others of her generation. Her widest audience may have come in the 2014 award-winning documentary Damnation, but to those who were deeply involved with the canyon, Lee was an icon. I knew Katie for over 10 years, said Eric Balkin, executive director of the Glen Canyon Institute. She was always a fiery character, and she was one of the most passionate environmentalists to have existed. These last few years, she became more peaceful. She seemed ready to pass the environmental torch on to the next generation. And the Center for Biological Diversity has issued a press release saying a court has upheld critical habitat for New Mexico's jaguars. The U.S. District Court in New Mexico ruled Wednesday against three livestock industry plaintiffs that sought to eliminate protections for 59,114 acres of critical habitat designated in 2014 to help recover the state's endangered jaguars. The ruling upholds protections under the Endangered Species Act that prevent the federal government from rendering the habitat unsuitable for jaguars, leaving intact the critical jaguar habitat in the state's southwest boot heel. An additional 705,000 acres were designated in Arizona but not challenged. In the case pitting the New Mexico Farm and Livestock Bureau, New Mexico Cattle Growers Association, New Mexico Federal Lands Council against defendant U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the court affirmed the service's finding that designating the critical habitat is essential to the conservation of the jaguar species. This is a big win for jaguars to keep living in parts of New Mexico's remote and rugged borderlands without additional threats to their survival, said Michael Robinson, a conservation advocate with the Center for Biological Diversity. The government should have protected far more habitat, including further north in the vast wild Gila National Forest, but without the desert country along the border, jaguars would have no chance to even make it further north. The Center for Biological Diversity intervened on the side of the government in this case. The center's previous lawsuits for the jaguar and against the government had resulted in big cats landing on the U.S. Endangered Species List in 1997 and receiving their critical habitat in 2014. The center was also the lead plaintiff in a case that led to the Fish and Wildlife Service releasing a draft jaguar recovery plan in December. That plan, which also omits consideration of important recovery habitat further from the border with Mexico, is expected to be finalized later this year. The decision preserves the critical habitat designation for the Peloncillo Mountains that straddle the New Mexico-Arizona line and is managed by the Coronado National Forest and on private lands in the Sierra San Luis a few miles further east. In 1996, a jaguar was photographed in the Peloncillos, and 10 years later, another jaguar was photographed in the San Luis Mountains. Both ranges cross the border with Mexico and can serve as undeveloped travel corridors for a wide variety of wildlife, including jaguars. Despite today's ruling, jaguars would still be cut off from habitat in the United States in the event that new fences or walls are erected to supplement the hundreds of miles of border wall that already exist. At present, New Mexico's Boot Heel region is free of so-called pedestrian barriers, which are also impermeable to wildlife much more than to people and their ladders and tunnels. The jaguar is a beautiful animal and a neglected part of our natural heritage in the Southwest, said Robinson. Preserving places where jaguars can still cross the border to live again in their native range has now been found fully legal, but we should go further, preserve bigger chunks of land, and take active steps to help the jaguars get there. And turkey vultures have been poisoned by euthanasia drugs in this story from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. CDFW has confirmed that several turkey vultures have been poisoned from the use of veterinary euthanasia drugs pentobarbital in the Simi Valley area north of Ventura County. Seven turkey vultures were found dead or impaired in Simi Valley in October. Two of these were successfully rehabilitated at the Ojai Raptor Center, but the other five have died. Pentobarbital exposure was confirmed in the digestive system of one of the dead turkey vultures, but the source of exposure remains unknown. Pentobarbital is used by veterinarians to euthanize companion animals, livestock, and horses. If the remains of animals euthanized with pentobarbital are not properly disposed of after their death, scavenging wildlife such as turkey vultures and eagles can be poisoned. Veterinarians and animal owners are responsible for disposing of animal remains properly by legal methods such as cremation or deep burial. Turkey vultures are protected by the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act and the California Fish and Game Code. Improperly disposed of euthanized remains are a danger to all scavenging wildlife. Members of the veterinarian livestock communities are asked to share this information with colleagues in an effort to prevent further incidents. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife also asked the public to pay attention to and report grounded turkey vultures and other raptors and scavengers. Pet et al. Poisoned birds appear to be dead. They have no reflex response and breathing can be barely detected. The birds appear intact without wounds or obvious trauma. Anyone finding a comatose vulture should report the findings to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife at area code 916-358-2954. That number again, 916-358-2954. And in Australia, a forest blockade has been established in East Gippsland's Quark Forest to protest old-growth logging. In this story from the Goongarra Environmental Center, as found on the Earth First Newswire, 20 conservationists have established a forest blockade in East Gippsland, Australia, to prevent logging machinery entering an area of old-growth forest due to be logged this week by the Victorian State Government Logging Agency, Vic Forests. The old-growth forest in the Princess Cut logging area in the Quark Forest, 40 kilometers northeast of Oberst, has never been logged before and is part of a large area of rare intact old-growth forest that conservationists are campaigning to protest. A person is suspended in a hammock hanging from a timber tripod that is blocking access to the logging area. Since Monday of last week, over 6,300 people have sent emails to Environment Minister Lily D'Ambrosio calling on her to protect the old-growth forest and prevent planned logging in the area. Logging in this irreplaceable ancient forest would be a tragic loss for Victoria, and people from across the state are converging in the Quark Forest to take peaceful direct action to prevent the destruction, said Goongarra Environment Center spokesperson Ed Hill. People are trying to stay here as long as it takes and risk arrest to prevent logging of this precious area. This old-growth forest is home to trees that are hundreds of years old. It's very rare to still be able to find unlogged, intact old-growth forest in each Gippsland. These forests provide a unique window of insight into what Victoria's forests looked like prior to European settlement, said Ed Hill. It's not the 1920s anymore. We don't need to be logging untouched old-growth forests. Logging of Victoria's last remaining remnant areas of ancient forests does not belong in the 21st century. It's astonishing that the Labor Party are still allowing old-growth logging in 2017. Daniel Andrews and Environment Minister Lily D'Ambrosio should seize this opportunity to protect old-growth forests and urgently need to act on the concerns of over 6,000 people who have contacted them in the last 7 days calling for protection of this irreplaceable ancient forest. East Gippsland is the Victorian stronghold for old-growth forest, rainforest, and biodiversity. It's the only place on mainland Australia where intact forests stretch from the Alps to the coast. We are so lucky to still have old-growth forests in this region and continue to destroy them, for low-value wood and paper products is incredibly short-sighted. Labor's logging has destroyed endangered wildlife habitat, old-growth forests, valuable carbon sinks, and precious rainforest areas. Their policy belongs in the 1950s, not in a socially progressive modern Victoria. They must show leadership on this issue, said Ed Hill. And in the United Kingdom, a hunter has been gored to death by a cornered deer. A hunter has died after he was charged and pierced by a deer that stabbed him with his antlers. Regis Levasseur had cornered the animal in France's Champagne Forest, about 50 miles northeast of Paris. Police said the 60-year-old victim had been acting as a beater who helped to flush out and corner the prey during the hunt, and he was unarmed. Normally the animal would flee, but this time the buck decided he would charge. Guy Harley, president of the local's Hunter Federation, told the local it came after him. The antlers of the stag are like many knives piercing you. There is nothing you can do. This tragic accident reminds me that we do not play with a wild animal. There is an inherent risk in hunting. Mr. Levasseur had reportedly been due to get married in the next few months. For him, hunting was more than a hobby. It was his life, said Mr. Harley. The killing came 2 days after French hunters with hounds sparked an uproar by shooting dead an exhausted stag at close range after cornering it in the garden of a house at the edge of Champagne Forest. The hunters reportedly fed the animal's carcass to their dogs after killing it in the village of Le Croix-Saint-Ouen. Footage of the cornered stag filmed by anti-hunt activists prompted France's environment minister Nicolas Hulot to criticize hunting with hounds as a practice from another century. The Mattole Forest lets us know that the Humboldt Redwood Company is trying to build the road again. HRC has resubmitted their proposal to build a new road above the headwaters of Sulphur Creek in the Mattole River watershed as an attempt to get around our blockaders. It is important to show opposition there is to the project. Public comment is once again open on this amendment to the Long Ridge Cable Timber Harvest Plan. If approved, the road will destroy a rocky outcrop with an old-growth bay laurel grove and various patches of native grasses. Please contact the California Department of Forestry and oppose Amendment Number 6 to the Long Ridge Cable THP, Number 1-12-026-HUM. In your subject line of the email, put public comment for THP 1-12-026. The email address is santarosapubliccomment@fire.ca.gov. Once again, that's santarosapubliccomment@fire.ca.gov. And for more information, go to the Save Mattole. I guess this is a Facebook page. Glamisiscu Wild writes, have you heard the news? The so-called Resilient Federal Forests Act of 2107, I believe that's supposed to be 2017, passed out of the House of Representatives last week. This bill is an extreme attack on public lands. Thankfully, most West Coast representatives voted against it, including DeFazio, Bonamici, and Huffman, and that's probably up in Oregon. They deserve our thanks. Representatives Walden was a cheerleader for the bill and deserves to hear from you about your opposition. Now the focus turns to the Senate. That's our only hope of stopping this horrible bill. The senators need to hear from you, so take action today. There is a serious national forest problem that needs fixing in Washington, D.C. Right now, funding to fight forest fires is taken directly from smart projects that would reduce fire risk and protect communities. Plenty of these fuels reduction projects are sitting on the shelf ready to go, but Congress won't fund them separately. We need a clean bill to free up that funding. Now get this, the Resilient Federal Forest Act proposes up to 50 square mile clear cuts with no public review. And there's nothing resilient about that. The research shows that cutting big trees and replacing them with small ones would only make fires worse. The bill would cripple the Endangered Species Act in order to log without regard for salmon or other precious wildlife. They also want to make sure that Klamasiski Wild and our allies can't challenge these projects in court. Please tell your senators that this bill is just an excuse for aggressive logging that will only make future forest fires more dangerous. And if you want more information, go to www.kswild.org. That's kswild.org. And the United States will suspend the use of M44 cyanide bombs to kill wild animals in this story from Reuters, as written by Laura Zuckerman. The U.S. government will suspend the use of so-called cyanide bombs to kill wild animals on public lands in Colorado, as well as plans to kill dozens of mountain lions and black bears there, federal officials and conservationists said on Monday. The legal agreement was struck between Wildlife Services, a branch of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, charged with killing so-called nuisance animals like coyotes and conservation groups. I don't know who wrote this. The deal was the second of its kind in less than a week and came as controversy mounted about the agency's use of M44s, which critics term cyanide bombs. The spring-loaded devices emit sodium cyanide and are blamed for actually accidentally killing pet dogs in Idaho, Wyoming, and elsewhere. Colleen Adkins, an attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity, said on Monday the aim of the lawsuits filed by activists in western United States against the Wildlife Services was to combat the cruel treatment of wildlife. A spokesperson for the Wildlife Services did not immediately respond to an email. The Colorado agreement stems from a lawsuit filed in April in the U.S. District Court in Denver by the Center for Biological Diversity and other groups. They allege Wildlife Services violated federal law by failing to fully assess the potential impact of killing cougars and bears in Colorado and other native wildlife like protected Canada lynx. Federal officials had also planned to shoot as many as 45 mountain lions and 75 bears in western Colorado over 3 years in a move to fight the decline of mule deer favored by hunters. Under the terms of the Colorado deal, Wildlife Services will assess the likely consequences of its predator control activities on other wildlife and the environment by August of 2018 and suspend the use of M44s on public lands in the state, the court documents showed. Federal officials will also suspend plans to kill cougars or bears there to boost deer numbers, according to the court documents. Last Wednesday, a U.S. judge approved a settlement between Wildlife Services and environmental activists tied to a lawsuit they filed in California that similarly alleged the U.S. agency had failed to conduct a thorough environmental analysis of the killing of wild animals in Northern California. Under that accord, Wildlife Services suspended for at least 6 years its practice of gunning down coyotes from helicopters and airplanes and using traps to kill creatures in wilderness areas in 16 Northern California counties. And there was reporting by Laura Zuckerman in Pinedale, Wyoming, and editing by Peter Cooney. Copyright Thomson Reuters. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. And you can find a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You could also tune in to WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 in the morning, KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon, or you could tune in to KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill or Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, or KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, or Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 in Berkeley, California. They all rebroadcast the Earth First Update. Please check their schedules for the day and time. You could also listen to Grateful Dread Public Radio on the web at gdprnashville.org. That's gdprnashville.org, Sunday at 2 a.m. Or you can always go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online to this or any previous Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download from radioforall.net and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.